Like Christmas is what it's called. That's Low from their album called Christmas. Now, when it comes to looking back over the year and taking stock of what were the big stories or who were the people that made their mark, for better or worse, you should always ask yourself, when Reeling in the Years gets around to making a show about 2014, who or what's going to be in it? Because that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Well, they should basically give Fiona Looney a shout, those Reeling in the Years people, because she has compiled a list for us of the people and the topics that had everybody talking from January to December this year. And I know what she's going to say. Honestly, Dave, if we were doing this tomorrow, I could have a different list, but this is a very important list.
Yeah, and it was really difficult, actually. You know, you tend at the end of every year to go, oh, not much happened. And then when you actually look back and, you know, because you forget the stuff that happened in January or February, and I actually had a much longer list, so it was actually quite hard to narrow it down.
I have the same thing
down,
I'm trying to narrow it down to 10 albums of the year.
Yeah.
I need to see the list.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
I have about 30 and then I can sort of knock it down. Anyway, 2014 in general, Fiona Looney, a year to remember or a year better forgotten, do you think?
Well, I suppose it was a kind of a mad year insofar as If somebody had said at the start of 2014, what will be the two biggest talking points in Ireland this year, you would have probably guessed the economy, you know, maybe Brian O'Driscoll's retirement, and we will talk about that. But, you know, there were things that were kind of flagged that, you know, were always going to be there, or the Troika leaving or whatever. If someone had said, actually, the two things we will talk about most in 2014 are water and Garth Brooks. I mean, you know, you couldn't, like, you know, it's a cliche.
Well, here's a recording of me last January saying, this year we'll be talking about Garth Brooks and water.
Yeah. Well, you're in the wrong career.
That's completely true. Listen, can we start with Garth Brooks then and put a lid on Garth Brooks.
We're never putting a lid on Garth Brooks. You know what? I loved this. I was away for a lot of it. I was actually on holidays when it all went a bit Pete Tong, as they say. And so I was following it on social media and also through incredibly outraged texts that I was getting from people here. People who aren't Garth Brooks fans, who were just outraged at the way that this kind of rolling scandal just gathered so much
moss
and everything.
At the intransigence of Garth Brooks?
Less the intransigence of Garth Brooks, more the kind of the belligerence of the residents, the arrogance of Croke Park, presumption. I mean, you know, looking back on it with a little bit of hindsight, nobody came out of it well.
That's the point about the whole thing.
Nobody came out of it well.
Do you have a theory about it all, though? Which side are you on? Is this a Saipan
It was a Saipan moment, and we were overdue another Saipan, so I hugely enjoyed it. I mean, it was another civil war. I should declare an interest because I've written a play about the whole thing, which you can see in September next year,
It'll be 2015. Touring
Dave.
Around the place.
It'll be touring around
the four corners
of
Ireland.
Thank you. I'm now going home.
Okay. And what's it called?
It's actually called Are You There, Garth? It's Me, Margaret, which is a slight skew on a book by Judy Blume, which is a coming-of-age book for girls and all that. And it's a lovely show, and go and see it. But anyway, in the course of writing it, I obviously did have to do a lot of research and kind of look at everything. Do you know what? I'm going to be very honest. I think the person, nobody came out of it well. I think the person who came out of it worst of all was Garth Brooks, to be honest. When you look back, he was the one who ultimately everyone else was willing to be
The reason I'm asking, do you have a theory or anything? Do you have a theory about the whole thing? Because I have a theory about the whole thing.
Well, you have a kind of like an Illuminati conspiracy theory type thing.
Not necessarily. But I think that Garth Brooks hasn't done anything in about 13 or 14 years except a residency at
Vegas,
right? And even the residency at Vegas, which is supposed to be 7 or 8 years or so, only lasted about half that. And it was easy to do. He was able to fly home every day or some nonsense, whatever it was. He was doing fine. He's done nothing new record-wise since 2001. That's an awful long time. That's about 12 or 13 years. So he decides, I'm going to do a comeback and I'm going to come back here. And there's at least, like, I'd say 90% of people under the age of 20 who said, who is this guy? He can sell out 5 Croke Parks. Yeah. Never heard of him, kind of thing. Okay, now, Garth had this thing. I'm going to do this thing in Ireland. I'm going to do a massive big show. I'm going to do a huge DVD. And I'm going to bring cranes and everything all over the place. And it's going to check out the configuration of what Croke Park is. And we're going to be absolutely huge and do a DVD for the next 4 years tour, etc. I think he got scared. I don't think he was ready for it. Hold on. Even though he played in Chicago and all the rest of it afterwards, I think it became too big for him. And the more the gigs were added, the easier it was for him to throw his toys out of the pram. That's all I'm trying to say. So,
I don't think so.
I think he just wasn't ready. I think a little scared.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. I don't think you're right. I wonder what the Mexican ambassador would have to say.
That's a nice way of saying, Dave, shut up. I'm the guest here.
But it was great the way that everyone, you know, from the Mexican ambassador to Kieran Mulvey, like Kieran Mulvey.
The Mexican ambassador was the best bit.
Yeah, well, that was when we knew.
No, the Lord Mayor of Dublin, the Lord Mayor of Dublin, the camera in the thing. Yeah. It's like, please, Roy, you've got to play for Saipan.
The Lord Mayor of Dublin in tears. The Mexican ambassador dancing around his sombrero.
By the way, for those who've just come back, from around the world for Christmas and have come back now and are here now this Sunday morning before Christmas early, and if you weren't following anything on, like anything online at all, be it Independent or Times or Examiner or whatever or any social media stuff, you've no idea what this month was like. You've just
no idea. Extraordinary in the summer, and you know, a lot of people did say we have become the laughing stock of the world. Trust me, I was in the world. Nobody outside Ireland gave a tuppenny toss about this. They didn't even know what it was.
Actually, I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to play a little bit of Gareth Brooks just talking about this here, because we both have a different sort of take on this. By the way, mine is just, you know, conjecture about the thing that he was getting scared about doing five massive gigs, because they were huge gigs. I mean, 500,000 people.
Everything was rocking. Every month over there, about every 6 weeks, you have a meeting where you have to pass their tests. Safety, people, rigging, everything. We've passed every one of those tests. Up to 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, it was nothing but love. And then came the thing where, hey, Garth, we're okay in three of them. You're going to have to figure out what to do with the other two. I wish I knew where that came from.
I wish I knew where that came from.
It was nothing but love.
All right, anyway, sorry, that's Gareth Brooks, which you mentioned earlier on.
It was great, and it lit up our summer. And it did give us a reprieve from water, which was the other. Water everywhere.
Yeah, but the water hadn't really started flowing in torrents
until afterwards, really. But I mean, certainly even at the beginning of the year, there was a sense that you know, every time people were talking about the way Irish water had been set up, you know, it became, you know, the perpetually exploding clown's car of Irish life. Like, you'd hear these mad stories about consultancy fees and the cost of meters, and it was rolling and rolling and rolling. And then obviously after the summer, you know, when people realised, I think it was a combination, well obviously it was because they were going to start the billing in October, the meters were going in but not enough of them, and people kind of, eventually people shouted stop, obviously, and have continued. I mean, this is still a rolling story. They've continued shouting stop.
A big stop after all the meters were put in. And where the money, I mean, the amount of money that cost for starters, the whole thing was very strange.
Oh, and like, and well, it, you know, it is, I mean, it is continuing to cost us a fortune, because even if we never end up paying for water, you know, which for what it's worth, I think we will, but even if we were never to pay for water, we're still going to have to pay for all those bloody
meters.
That's
the point I'm making. Yeah, exactly. So, like, do you really want to keep going? I know we're talking about certain things the and we had Gareth Brooks, now we're onto Irish water. You don't want to give us any more on Irish water.
No, but I want to say one thing, because I want to commend the Irish public, the Irish media, no, mainly the Irish public. It was a great credit to the Irish people that the main thing in our hour of need with the whole water thing, the main thing we turned to were puns. And every poster, you know, not a drop more, flush Irish water, you know, not paying a tap, you know, it was just, fluck off, my personal favourite. And I just loved the way everyone, you know, vented their anger in pun form, and I thought that was a great credit to us. You can move on now.
Okay, let's go.
The tide will go out.
Okay, by the way, let's stay with water for a second. What about the water, the cold one in the bucket?
Oh,
that was 2014.
First of all, did you ever do it?
I did it because I had to do it. Okay, it was done for charity. Now go on.
Well, it was all done for charity.
There were great ones online though. If you're talking about the pun ones, some of the ones where the mother, your mum was going to say all these things, and the mother did it too early, and mammy, it's brilliant.
You know, I'll do the kind of the sort of the caveat and say, wasn't it great? It made so much money for charity. I hated it.
I hated the ice bucket challenge, by the way, is what we're talking about here.
Oh, God. I became disproportionately annoyed by it, and I just couldn't watch them. And the way, you know, a lot of people kind of were only watching ones where people were getting injured, which struck me as a bit kind of...
Oh, they were the best ones.
Yeah, apparently so. I didn't do it, and I was publicly challenged to do it. Like, the lovely Al Porter, who comes into column and works on Republic of Telly, who's a good mate of mine, he publicly challenged me to do it, and it was online and all this. And I just went, no, I'm not... And it wasn't... You know, I mean, my son would regularly throw books. Well,
yeah, I was just saying, like,
head,
but
you know,
I mean, in the same way
events.
As I'm a celebrity and X Factor and all the rest, but you don't think it brought the family together if you have a bunch of kids with the pizza and the granny, no?
Do you know what? I'm delighted it made so much money, and good luck and well done to everyone who did it.
The damning with faint praise.
I cannot explain why it annoyed me so much,
right.
But it did.
Okay,
but
it just got out of hand.
Yeah,
didn't
it did
really?
A bit. Yeah.
Smugness set in.
Yeah, and you know, when you had kind of, you know, when it sort of got to the point where you were ringing sensible people, like, you know, kind of people with proper jobs, and they were going, can I ring you back? I've just got to go out to the staff room to do the ice bucket challenge. Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, okay, point taken. All right, the ice bucket challenge, very 2014. That will definitely be on wheel in the year, in a bunch of years' time, and will be nothing to do with 2013, 2015, or anything other than that. Now, panty.
Yeah, the Risen People was on in the Abbey, and the Risen People was last Christmas's Abbey show, but ran on it into about February.
So in a James Plunkett kind of way, what you're saying his lockout speech, Panty made his speech.
They did a thing at the end of it every night called the Noble Call, and a different performer went up and did a speech. Panty went up.
And a standing ovation lasted?
If you haven't seen it, it's still on YouTube.
Yeah.
I actually think in 100 years, when people write books about whatever about reeling in the years, when people write about the great speeches of our time, I think it'll be in there. It is everything you need to know about being gay, not just about being gay, about being in a minority, about being oppressed in Ireland in the 21st century. I mean, I made my kids watch it on the basis that I thought, you know, I don't ever need to say anything to my kids about minorities, about oppression, about homophobia, other than just show them this. And I mean, I cried watching it. They cried watching it. Yeah, and it's a wonderful speech. And I was delighted then that that Panty won a People of the Year award there just a couple of weeks ago, and Stephen Fry came over to present it. And I thought it was lovely because that's a very populist, you know, that's not a kind of an artsy, elitist, left-wing lobby awarding those things. That's the general public. It's, you know, it's the broader kind of spectrum of Irish life.
All right, fair enough. Fiona, moving on to the next one then. What have we got the next one in terms of the year and looking back on it, etc.?
Do you know what? Another thing that drove me slightly mad while I'm kind of, I'll go back to being annoyed. I don't know how you felt about this. The way we decided that days have to have names all of a sudden, like Black Friday.
Oh, yeah.
This is quite a recent thing now. This is only kind of the last few weeks.
Are you against it to the point
of
Cyber Monday and all the rest of it, etc.?
Like, put it this way, if somebody was to do the Ice Bucket Challenge on Black Friday, to me that's a perfect storm right there, you know. I mean, I would just have to leave
or
the country.
Cyber Monday. You've got to understand something that, like, you know, we do live in very different internet times, and therefore that's just the way it's necessarily going to be. I mean, don't forget that the Cyber Monday thing is a huge thing for small businesses, people selling kitchen utensils and all the rest, and out there this is the big day that we have special things all together. So go on the internet, have a look and see what offers we have, and like some, like, the $6 billion was spent in America,
and, you know, and I don't have any problem with that. It's calling it by certain names and presuming that this
is a
thing.
Well, hold on. Remember the 8th of December? Everybody comes up from the country to Dublin to buy the big toys.
But what do we call it? The 8th of December.
You know,
like, why don't
we? It's the name you're giving it.
And while I'm down there, there was another, and I know this is so petty, pulled pork.
Well, yeah, what is this pulled pork business?
Can we not just have pork? Can we not go back to just having pork? And I did see
somewhere
recently,
there are many things that you've grown up with that you think as being absolutely normal in your own life, and that people from the 50s and 60s would go, what the hell is this about? So come on, relax, doesn't matter.
I mean, I was at Electric Picnic this year, and you could not buy pork that wasn't pulled in some shape or form. And then I saw somewhere pulled chicken, and I thought, no, I'm sorry, I am not having that. Pulled chicken is not a thing. So there was a lot of
kind
of...
But is this not the same as the coffees from a few years ago, like where you get a big one, a middling one, or a small one, but it has to be gratte and lande and whatever they are and all the rest. Sorry, lande and gratte, sick and tired of them all, you know. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous.
I know, and you know, I'm sure it's just part of actually getting old, you know, is that, you know, there is just a kind of a, you know, what on earth are they doing with my beautiful language? But anyway, particularly Black Friday and Cyber Monday. I don't want them, can we just call them busy Friday.
By the way, this thing all happened. It's the first Monday. The Cyber Monday one is the first Monday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and Black Friday is the day after Thanksgiving. And they're both shopping days. And as I say, I have no problem with people spending money. But don't just pretend that we've always done this. You know, don't say, Black Friday sale, and presume we know what it is.
Let's move on to something else. What else was good or bad about the year?
Let's talk about the FAI, which was extraordinary about this year. And again, you know, if you'd imagined at the start of the year, we knew we were going to be starting into, a World Cup campaign, your new management team. We would have been hopeful that the results would be good. The results have been good.
Hold on a second. We haven't been going into a World Cup campaign.
European Championship.
European Championship campaign. Because don't forget, but the beginning of this year, we knew we weren't in the World Cup.
Yeah, sorry. No, starting into a European Championships campaign with, two new brooms. And we would have hoped that, we wouldn't have been hugely optimistic, let's be honest, with the pool of players we had. But we would have hoped that at the end of the year we'd be talking about the results. And in actual fact, the results have been really quite encouraging. And certainly the performance against Germany out there was really, really commendable. John O'Shea getting that goal. And I was at a Jake Bugg gig that night in the Olympia. And so, we were just obviously listening to Jake Bugg. And obviously some people were watching on their phones or were keeping a watching brief.
That's very disrespectful to Jake.
But in the middle of a Jake Bugg song, people started singing Olé, Olé, Olé. Now, I know people do that at Irish gigs, which is another thing that drives me mad, but we'd park that. But it was literally in the middle of a song. And I was kind of going, what is this about? This is terrible. And then kind of looked at my own phone and realised John O'Shea had got the equaliser and all that. And suddenly it all made sense. And then somebody came over and whispered in Jake Bugg's ear what it was about. So it was great. Not that he acknowledged it for one second, it has to be said. But that was all really good. But unfortunately, at the end of the year, you think FAI, you think Irish football, and you think John Delaney sitting at a bar singing ballads, and you think Roy Keane and the ongoing controversies over Roy Keane. And I don't know how you... I mean, I would be... I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of Roy. I'm fascinated by Roy Keane. I find him absolutely compelling, fascinating, amazing. All that being said, and I don't know how you feel about this, I think we've come to the stage where I just think he has to go. I think he's a distraction. I think
he
is damaging.
Not just from Villa, but from Ireland as well. He's gone from Villa, of course.
And you know, when he went from Villa, which is only a few weeks ago, they said, Roy Keane is part of company with, and every part of my body expected the end of that sentence to be the Republic of Ireland. And it wasn't. But, I mean, do you think he
am sick and tired of the whole Roy Keane saga.
Do you think he has to go
I think it might be an awful lot better, absolutely.
No disrespect to him, but he just attracts controversy, and he is a distraction. And some of it is of his own most of it is of his own making, to be very honest.
I just don't understand why so much emphasis is put on a manager, with all due respect, and so little on the players. But anyway,
and he's not even the manager.
No, but he's been in number two, whatever. Yeah. Okay, that's Roy Keane once again who's taken over, and that'll definitely be there and reeling in the ears, all right? As it was in the Saipan one. I've seen the interview. But why?
The perpetual
Roy Keane
reeling in the ears.
Give us another one.
Well, let's stick with sport.
Go on, Roy King.
No, just staying with the sporting theme. Brian O'Driscoll's never-ending retirement, I think.
It was the retirement that kept on giving. First of all, there was like 48-page pullouts in every single newspaper for the whole week of his last game, which wasn't his last game, because it was last game in a place.
Like, it was kind of, I think we started with his last away game for Ireland, and then it was his last home game for Ireland.
And then Leinster, and then Aviva.
It was kind of, it was getting to the point of his last game wearing a particular pair of underpants,
Do you think in any way at all that he himself might be slightly embarrassed at all of this? Like, can I just kind of slip out quietly now at this stage?
Well, he didn't seem to be,
He seemed to enjoy it.
But it was just, it was a bit relentless, it has kind of come to the point where you're sort of wondering, is he going to be delivering this retirement speech? Is he going to tour it next year, around kind of the ICA
branch? Or is your woman Fiona Looney going to write a play about it? You never know, indeed.
But it did seem to go on forever.
But they are our Posh and Becks, aren't they?
Oh, they are, absolutely. And actually, I noticed that there was some survey there 3 weeks ago about who you would most like to kiss under the mistletoe, and Amy won it, and then Brian was like third or something. So, yeah, they are. They are our Posh and Becks.
Yeah,
they did another lovely baby and all that.
Absolutely.
And good luck to them.
Yeah, indeed. Absolutely. Okay, so Brian O'Driscoll, it was the retirement that kept on giving. And that's one you like in one way, but at the same time, enough is enough.
Yeah, enough's enough. Right. Yeah, go and mind Go mind the children, for God's sake.
Exactly. Or do the BT Sport thing. Have you seen BT Sport? He's doing that on that.
This is fantastic, really. I'm so delighted to go out in this high. It's exactly as we would have wanted to have a second Six Nations medal around my neck. I should have retired ages ago. Getting two of these in 2 weeks seems farcical, but you know, I'm loving it.
Anyway, go on. Let's go on to something else.
The Rose of Tralee.
The Rose of Tralee
was an unexpected highlight of the year, and I think most people, most people tend to be quite down on the Rose of Tralee.
Did you watch it, or did you just see all the stuff in the papers?
To be honest, I didn't watch it because I think it's just dreadfully insulting to women, so I never watch it. However, you could not avoid the very gorgeous Maria Walsh.
Absolutely.
Who won it, and I just love the idea that you know, like, and I was thinking about it. I was going to say, you know, when the Rose of Tralee started, if you told somebody, but last year, if you had told somebody that next year the Rose of Tralee will be won by a short, punky-haired lesbian covered in tattoos, you'd kind of go, "What? You know, like, this is
good
mad."
Good point. Yeah.
And it was great, and you know, and it was great that people were very kind of unflapped about it, you know, that it wasn't. I know that she didn't talk about her sexuality on the night, obviously not, it didn't come up, you know, but when it did come out in the days following, that it was just such a kind of a no big deal, and that she was very calm, and you know, and the media was, you know, sometimes you worry that there could be a bit of a hysteria about that, and a kind of a, you know, let's kind of start going through our little black book and try and dig up former lovers and
do
stuff.
Do you think,
and
in terms of what the Rose of Tralee is and what it represents and all the rest of it, it's done the Rose of Tralee an absolute power of good?
Well, I don't know, because I mean, personally, I think the Rose of Tralee just should be kicked into touch.
I'm asking the wrong person here, Ireland. Then, yeah.
But it was a breath of fresh air to see it being won by, you know, like, to be honest, if I were to meet Maria and sit down with her after I'd congratulated her, I would be really curious to know why she entered it.
Why'd you go in the first place? Here it is, Rose Tralee.
I'm not feeling that much, and I don't know if it's the shoes or the feet that are tired or the cheeks are sore from smiling, but I'm just really excited. I still can't believe it is probably the best sentence to say. I went back and met some of the girls last night, and I was like, what? This is ridiculous. What am I doing here? Everybody was so excited for me. I'm just surprised.
She's just surprised, and congratulations to her, Rose of Tralee. I hope she's having a good year of it so far.
I love the fact there's a church bell ringing in the background. It's real New Ireland and old Ireland colliding, isn't it? It's fantastic.
Okay, that's the Rose of Tralee, and this is Oscar Pistorius. We're talking to Fiona, by the way. Fiona's just looking at some things of the year. Fiona Looney, we can do this for 6 hours. We're doing about 10 or so. So, Oscar Pistorius, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it was an awful story, and everything about it was terrible. I found it, I think, like a lot of people did, it was fascinating to watch a very different legal system from our own.
Yeah.
To see the trial and the way, you know, because we're used to trials, obviously, in America, where the legal system is broadly based on the British system, as is our own. And, you know, while, okay, they mightn't wear the wigs and all that, it's fundamentally the same kind of format. But it was really quite different in South Africa. And, like, I was kind of particularly fascinated that when the trial was over and he then went back for sentencing, and they more or less ran the whole trial again, like, as a pre-sentence hearing, which I thought was amazing. I mean, like most people, you know, when the verdict came out, I was disappointed. The sentence was disappointing. You know, I know there are still various kind of appeals and you know, avenues that will be explored, and I think
was
he will.
Was it an OJ moment for you?
Actually, to be very honest, God, an unpopular thing to say, I was quite happy with the OJ verdict, because I did think he hadn't had a fair trial. And I think, Oscar, the difference is that I think Pistorius did have a fair trial, and I think the verdict was wrong. And, I mean, obviously the verdict was down to one woman, you know, rather than a jury system, and, you know, and it was kind of, it was unexpected. Look, the main thing is the guy's in jail, as he should be, but the family are obviously very unhappy. Rena Steenkamp's family are very unhappy, and understandably so. But it was kind of, you know, like, I suppose it was similar to the O.J. Simpson trial in that it was one of those real hero to zero moments.
Oh, yeah.
And it was... You know, it was one of those that's definitely going to be unreal.
The stuff that came out about his past as well was pretty chilling stuff.
Yeah, it was, and you know, it did. I mean, obviously, his life was. you know, awful. And you know, I mean, not just the fact that he lost his legs, but, you know, he had a tough upbringing, but he seemed to be a very hard individual. But also, I thought it reflected quite badly on South African society. Mm. That, you know, that stuff about him, you know, firing off guns in restaurants, yeah, and not being kind of sent to jail for that. I mean, imagine if you did that over here, you know, like it's, you just couldn't imagine.
Okay, I'll give you a blast of the verdict.
Dr. Sip, an independent witness who was at the accused's house minutes after the incident had occurred, stated that the accused looked genuinely distraught as he prayed to God and as he pleaded with him to help save the deceased. There was nothing to gainsay that observation, and this court has not been given any reason to reject it, and we accept it as true and reliable. It follows that the accused's erroneous belief that his life was in danger excludes dolus. The accused therefore cannot be found guilty of murder dolus eventualis. That, however, is not the end of the matter, as culpable homicide is a competent verdict.
Oscar Pistorius trial from 2014. We're looking at 2014 with Fiona Looney, and we're here on 2FM until midday. Now, let me take a look. What about the breach of the iCloud at the very end of August? What are we talking here, basically? I mean, the hacking of various celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah.
The private photos ended up all over the internet.
Nudie photos on the internet. Obviously, they were all of women, which disappointed some people. I didn't look at any of them, I have to say. Because the celebrities asked me not to, and I always do what celebrities say. I thought it was an awful violation, and, you know, honestly, like, you know, I love Jennifer Lawrence. I don't know why. I mean, I love her on film, but I also, you know, I like the way she keeps falling over, getting her awards, and there's just
the last time now was like, I better fall over tonight because I'm you know, I'm sponsored by so and so who expect me to fall over.
Yeah, the soles of my shoes now have advertising on them. Do you not like her?
No, I do. Yeah, she's a bit of a laugh. She's a bit mad.
Yeah, she's
a bit
very refreshing,
unconventional.
And but it was just, you know, I mean, you know, there was initially a kind of a sense when it was sort of just Jennifer Lawrence and before everyone else's photos started coming out, there was almost a sense of this has happened by accident, you know, that this is somehow, you know, like a vindictive ex-boyfriend. But like when you're talking about hundreds of celebrities' photos being leaked, you are talking about a concerted campaign.
Yeah, and by the way, being leaked
women.
Is just all about the privacy of the iCloud or the cloud computing, and it's being brought into serious question now. The claims that it had made that it can do this and can't do that and you can't do this, and now it shows you can do everything.
I mean, I thought it also brought up an interesting question. I was going to say moral question. I didn't really think it was a moral question, but I know some people did. Where, you know, a lot of people, maybe older people or whatever, were saying, well, you know, what are these women doing posing naked or posing in sexual, you know.
That wasn't necessarily the question they were asking. Saying, what are these women doing posing and putting the pictures up there?
But they weren't putting them up there. They were on their phones.
I know, but they're in a place that if like Mr. Hacker can just get there and find them, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there was the reason that they were taking these photos in the first place was, you know, obviously it was private. It had to do with relationships that they were in or whatever. They didn't expect them to be leaked. And I thought there was a slight moral backlash of kind of, you know, if you are going to take a photograph of yourself naked or if you're going to post for a naked photograph, you get what you deserve.
There was, but there's an awful lot of people say, like, you know, watch yourself in terms of what you put up on Facebook as well, because if you go for a job in 7 years' time, those tattoos, those drunken nights, etc., might come back to haunt you, etc. And there's an element of, you know, that, you know, private is private and not necessarily private as the internet.
Yeah, but at the same time, you should have a right to take a photograph of anything you want and send it to anybody you want without it. Well, yes, I mean, obviously, you know, like, okay, let's not go there. You know, I thought it was a really depressing story of the year, and, you know, it would have been so much easier as a woman. I'm getting very feminist on you now here today.
I certainly didn't give me any sleepless nights reading about the whole. I just thought, whatever, you know, like, these people are out in the public eye anyway, it doesn't make
a difference.
Yeah,
they were all women.
Think.
There wasn't one man. And don't tell me no man has never taken a photograph of his genitals, because men invented frankly.
there must be no, God, there must be no audience for it.
You know, if anyone wants to send me photographs, you know, I may rue the day I said that, I'd be game. Yeah. Anyway, it was a dark
So we're talking Jennifer Lawrence, we're talking Kate Upton, we're talking Kirsten Dunst,
there was a huge
and a thousand of others.
Yeah. And then the flip side, because I'm now going to take a complete opposite stance. Then much
to
later
make sure
here,
we know you're sitting on the fence.
We had Kim Kardashian, which obviously was authorised, was properly shot, proper photographer, and I loved it. I have to say, I thought those photos were amazing. I thought she looked.
Grace Jones album cover kind of way.
In a Grace Jones album, which is not, by the way, which Grace Jones herself had, was that, that's a derivative album cover, because in actual fact, I can't remember the name
Night
of the
Clubbing,
photographer.
Is it? Oh yeah.
But the photographer
Good.
Who...
Jean-Paul
yeah,
Good
that's
or something,
him.
Is it? Yeah.
So he shot Kim Kardashian after the original model for it, a black model in the 60s who was also gorgeous, who did those champagne shots. Grace Jones copied them. Yeah. Kim Kardashian obviously has done an homage to it. But I just love, she does have an extraordinary bottom. I mean, there's just absolutely no two ways about it.
Just for those not in the know, was there enhancing going on there? That was the real deal, was it?
Apparently not. Apparently, right. That is her.
Well, I thought the meme stuff and all the rest of it, the stuff that was going all around her, Boris Johnson parking his bike.
Yeah,
there and,
yeah.
All
and you know, and my son Brilliant. Obviously loves photo. My son is big into photoshopping, so you know, I now on my phone have my son, and it's not just his teenage head appearing in the wrong points. He used his baby photos, which kind of makes it,
and all the stuff of like carrots and potatoes and all the rest.
Yeah, but you know, ultimately, I thought it was, I would have been one of these people who up till this year didn't really know who Kim Kardashian was, and kind of prided myself on the fact that I knew everything about Kanye West, but didn't know very much about Kim Kardashian. But I have to say, at the end of the year, I hugely approve of her.
And of course, Kim Kardashian goes right back to the OJ trial we mentioned earlier on, because they would not be famous without being on the OJ trial.
I did not know that.
I'll tell you all about that. Well, the father was involved. He was one of the defence lawyers and all the rest of it, etc. There you go. So that's why they got their TV program in the first place.
Right, I did not know that.
Which is all terribly sad, really. Anyway, okay, can we go to one more then, Fiona? What else do we have?
We could do
love hate, I suppose. Yeah,
we could do love hate. Yeah, I think a lot of people were kind of a bit ambivalent about the ending, but it had some brilliant moments in it. And I mean, I have to say, what I loved about it most was that it's a very long time since there was a television program that on a Monday morning in Ireland, if you hadn't seen it, there was no point in going to school, there was no point in going to work. Everyone talked about it every Monday morning. And I love that. I love when those kind of cultural little, odd moments happen. And obviously the ending, because it was a little bit vague, and then you had this... I loved the way, hearing old women on the bus on the Monday saying, no, he's definitely dead. Lord have mercy on him. He's definitely dead. And, as though he was a real person. And, and then, my editor in the Mail on Sunday, I was talking to him and he was going... he said, I have a theory, I think Nidge is still alive. And I had to point out to him, I said, Nidge was never alive. Nidge is a fictional character, let's not get too carried away by this, But we did get carried away. And it was a great credit to everyone involved in Love Hate that we did get carried away.
Appointment viewing and water cooler moments and all the rest of it. Yeah, indeed it was, all of that. All right, well, listen, Fiona, first of all, September, is that when, what's it called again?
It's called, I can't remember, it's called Are You There, Garth? It's Me, Margaret. And yeah, it'll be September if we can ever get it together to actually do it. No, it's booked. It has to happen now. Right. And it's written.
It's written. All right, okay. Yeah. All right, listen, Fiona Looney, thank you very much indeed. Just as a matter of interest, if you were here last year, you would not necessarily have said water and Garth Brooks. Is there anything you might not necessarily say now that you might be right about for 2015?
Oh, God. Oh, put me on the spot, why don't you? There's going to be a hugely successful Garth Brooks stage show.
Right, okay. Thank you very much, Fiona. Fiona Looney, I'm going to leave you with a little bit here of love, hate, as you say, water cooler and appointment viewing and all the rest of us.